Congress passed the FISA Amendment Act of 2008 in June of that same year, which reformed the 1978 Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The legislation, among other things, ordered lawsuits filed against telecommunications companies that engaged in government-ordered warrantless spying on American citizens to be dropped. The law also granted retroactive immunity from prosecution to these same companies. Although then-Senator Barack Obama had voiced opposition to warrantless surveillance of U.S. citizens, he voted for the bill. Over the last several years, the Electronic Frontier Foundation, under the Freedom of Information Act, has been seeking the release of the identities of lobbyists working on behalf of telecommunications companies that pressured various government agencies and Congress to grant their clients immunity. On February 9th, a federal appeals court in San Francisco gave a boost to the lawsuit when it rejected the Obama administration's claim of lobbyist privacy to hide the identities of telecom industry lobbyists. In his ruling, Judge Michael Daley Hawkins said, quote, "There is a clear public interest in public knowledge of the methods through which well-connected corporate lobbyists wield their influence," end quote. Between the Lines, Scott Harris spoke with Rebecca Jeschke, Media Relations Director with the Electronic Frontier Foundation, who explains why her group is demanding information on telecom lobbyists and the current status of government spying on U.S. citizens.
As you may know, there has been a lot of back and forth with the government, with the courts, about how much information the public has a right to see, and we feel the right the public has deserves to know about what these corporations have done and did to influence the government, to advance their interests, and to protect them in court. Most recently, part of it went to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals in San Francisco, and the court ruled that there was a clear public interest in the public knowing the methods through which corporate lobbyists wield their influence over government. So that was good. The appeals court backed our push to get more disclosure. However, it also sent part of the case back down to the district court. This is how the court process goes, and asked the district court to consider some issues further, including how to release the identities of the lobbyists and if that would reveal state secrets somehow. So every time we get a ruling from a district court judge, the government tries to block. So that's why this is still ongoing.
What would happen if your group and others pursuing this case did get the identities revealed in court? What would be the next step then?
Well, we would use those identities to find out, you know, who they were working for, and to gather more information. We're not really interested in knowing, for example, it was Jane Doe per se. What we're interested in is what that says about what organizations they work for, what kinds of, you know, payments they got to do the work that they did. It's that these names, as part of the communications that go back and forth, hold the key to more information that is much more relevant than their actual names, to the kinds of negotiations that went on during the FISA Amendments Act debate of 2008.
What aspect would that be important to know? Let's say you got some lobbyists, firms and actual individuals named, and you found out, for instance, that Sprint or AT&T or Verizon or whatever these big companies were all lobbying the White House and Congress to get their retroactive immunity. What kinds of information would be important for the public to know about that process in terms of money that may have changed hands, contributions to various legislators on Capitol Hill or to presidential campaigns? I'd be curious to know about that. But is that the kind of logic that you're following?
Yes, and that's exactly where we'd start, of course, is following the money, seeing, you know, what kind of money telecommunications companies paid to what lobbyists, who they contacted, what sort of money overlap there was, in various parts of these, interactions. But one of the interesting things about FOIA documents, is that when you, open them to the public, which is what we do. We, you know, put them on the website and have people sort of, you know, crowdsource it. Is that you often don't know what you're going to find, and there's surprises in there. And the more information, that's why you need all the information that's available to you by law, is because you sometimes don't know what kind of picture you're going to paint until you have all the data there in order to put it together.
President Obama, when he campaigned for the presidency, talked about how the country needed to return to the rule of law, which he charged the his predecessor, George W. Bush, with tarnishing. The September 11th attacks justified a lot of abuses of power Barack Obama talked about. And as a professor of constitutional law, he discussed the need for government openness, transparency, contrasting himself with President Bush. It seems that the positions that Barack Obama has taken since he's become president really contradict his positions as a candidate.
That has been true in transparency issues. There have been some situations where he's been more transparent, and that's great, and we celebrate that. But unfortunately, a lot of our Freedom of Information Act cases, some of our other lawsuits involving the warrantless wiretapping, happening the AT&T, Juul, the NSA, those are, you know, cases against the government on a broader scale about the warrantless wiretapping. The Obama administration has basically mimicked the position of the Bush administration that these are state secrets and cases should not be litigated, and in some cases have gone even farther and made even more sweeping claims than the Bush administration.
What do we know right now about the surveillance programs begun by President George W. Bush? What is the status now of these massive internet as well as phone communication surveillance programs that recorded millions of calls or analyzed them for keywords or we don't know what? Is that still in play, or is that a mystery or a government secret at this point?
As you know, it's a secret that's not a secret. The Bush administration has basically acknowledged that it went on during the Bush administration, yet some parts of it are still a secret. Certainly, I would think that if the administration stopped these policies or changed them fundamentally, that they would crow about it to the American people. And that's certainly not something that we've seen happen. There were lots of physical structures that were put into place for this widespread surveillance. As you said, these dragnet surveillance of internet traffic, of emails, we have evidence of the specific secret room in San Francisco at AT&T that diverted all this internet traffic to the NSA. It would be hard to turn all that stuff off. Once something that big is moving, it's kind of hard to stop it.
That was Rebecca Jeschke, Media Relations Director with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. Contact the foundation by calling area code 415-436-9333 or visit their website at eff.org.